Apple, Amazon, Google, Facebook. Actually, just name any huge company that started from nothing. After they launched, how did they survive? Early stage investment. That's right, way, way back in the early days, these tech giants needed a helping hand from friends, family, and bold investors that were willing to take a risk financially to help these companies start to become what they are today. But the thing is, for every giant successful tech company out there, thousands upon thousands don't make it. Investing in the startup space can be overwhelming, but the benefits could be massive. But how do you even get started? Today, I'm joined by my friend, Jeffrey Potvin, founder of OPN, a fund that invests in early stage companies, to discuss the basics of how to navigate being an investor in this high risk space. I hope you enjoy this one. Welcome, JP, to the Fry Team Podcast.
Brendan, it is a pleasure and an honor to be here today. So I'm pretty excited to dive in and see what we've got to learn and what we can both share with each other. So I'm pretty excited about this.
I'm looking forward to it too, man. Before we get started, just so people get a sense of who you are and what you do, can you just give our audience a little idea of just that, who you are, what you do, what OPN is, the Supporters Fund, all that?
You bet. Did you want a real deep background or a really high level just into the current position that we're in today?
So I will put your contact info into the show notes. So if people do want to explore further, I'll link up the website, your LinkedIn profile. So let's just go Cliff's elevator pitch, if you will, because I know you hear 100 of those every single day.
I love it. Perfect. Well, again, thank you for having me today. My name is Jeffrey Potvin, or as most go by, JP. And a little bit of a background is, my background is ex-software engineer, worked for the largest retailer in Canada, which is Loblaws. And then from there is where I got started working with early stage companies. And you know, it's interesting how it all unfolded, but today, 20 years later, continue to work and support with early stage companies. We predominantly focus on, at OPN and the Supporters Fund, we focus on deep tech, fintech, and CPG. So consumer goods, fintech is more or less in the DeFi space, Web 3.0, really changing the world around financial whereabouts and what they're doing. And then the first one is deep tech, which is really dear to my heart. I'm a big fan of technology. And again, this falls into deep tech, which is AI, machine learning. There is some B2B, B2C, a lot of different things that are going to focus on back-end technologies. So those are the areas that we focus on. How this all got started is I started investing in early stage companies about 12 years ago. Before that, I spent a lot of time working with them. I didn't have the opportunity to invest. When I created my first company 15 years ago called Hardboot, we do resourcing with offices in Pakistan, Philippines, Toronto, and Egypt. With that, we put resources into big pharma, health, and bank tech companies. And while doing that, that's where we kind of continue to work with early stage, getting in front of innovation. And over the 15 years of doing that, we continue to work and innovate inside of this early stage space. And about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, those companies were coming to us after making investments saying, hey, we could really use some help. And that's where we decided to create the Open People Network. And this network was built to help early stage companies get in front of early stage investors. Especially back in the day, it was very tough to find investors. And we wanted to open that network up so that we could not only learn and help those early stage companies with how they were pitching and who they were getting in front of, but being able to bring in more investors into the network and help them find great deal flow. So that's kind of how we started. And then instead of it just being myself investing, we decided to create a fund. And that was about 4 years ago. And from that time period, we've created two funds that invest again in the deep tech, fintech, and CPG space. We've brought in over 40 angels that have invested into our fund. And we've just launched a third fund, which will help support the model that we've created, which typically is 90% of the time we're first money in. And then we provide opportunities for our angels to sit on board seats, observer roles inside of the companies we invest in to help them grow. And we've also created a podcast where we interview angels and VCs to help provide more insights into a lot of great people out there that are supporting this ecosystem. So there's lots of things that we do inside the community that we've built, and we're just big fans of the whole community across the globe.
I love this story. I've watched Dragon's Den and Shark Tank enough to know most of the entrepreneurs on there come from the corporate side, say, okay, maybe there's a better way, or maybe I want to do something on my own. You go build your own, you help other companies out, rather, other entrepreneurs, and now you're actually managing your own fund with investors that are angel investors. That's absolutely fantastic. I love this story. So with what I did, angel investors, this seems to be a bit of a mystery to a lot of people, where you have to be accredited, which means you need to pass some certain criteria to be able to invest in these early stage companies. But how would you recommend, you know, if I'm somebody on the street that has a little bit of spare cash that wants to diversify a little bit and wants to be able to invest in these early stage companies, do you have any recommendations on how somebody who doesn't tick those boxes, how you can possibly get involved in the space?
For sure. And, you know, I think in time you're going to see over the next few years that a lot of these in the DeFi space, and which is, you know, decentralizing how all the money transacts in the world, and that it's not just for the top tier investors, et cetera. All of those things and measures are going to start to change. And they are changing today, and they're opening up, which is, I think, is fantastic. So it's allowing everybody to have access and the opportunities to invest in all different types of equities. And these things really make a difference, assets, et cetera. So how do you go about this if you may not hit the requirements today, but you're planning on hitting them over the next few years? So I would highly recommend, if you're interested in the early stages where they say you can make a difference, but there is a way to make a difference, from helping open doors, helping with sales, or just working with the early stage companies. But I think the reason why there's a lot more openness there is because they're also trying to find their way through the ecosystem. They're trying to find clients. They're trying to find the right market fit. So there's a lot of opportunities to help early stage companies, where it's a little bit more difficult when you're getting into companies that are generating 5-10 million in revenue and you want to jump in and help support them. You know, it's the same thing as trying to jump in and help support Apple and explaining to them what markets they're not in. They probably are going to be a little bit busy at that time, and they may not have the ears to listen to every investor. So you really want to go where you can make a difference, where your dollar can make a difference. So getting into these early stage companies and helping guide open doors, you can do that all on free will. You can just make introductions and start to work with different tech or founders that you like. That is, there's no harm in that whatsoever. I think that's actually a great way to start networking, going to events and participating and helping some of these founders with the tech that you think you can support based on your background. Then the secondary thing is that there's a lot of platforms that are now allowing you, without having to be an accredited investor, that you can make investments. There's a couple of different angel groups that are structured around allowing, I think it's like 40% of the investment can be done by non-accredited investors. I think it's something like up to $2,500 per investment can be made by non-accredited. So there are, again, other ways that allow you to start making investments. You can get onto other social platforms that allow you to make these types of investments, micro investments across many companies. And, you know, some of these companies can take off. Even if you've only put $1,000 in and you put them into 100 companies over the next 5 years, there's potential where those can, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 times X your value, and you would be exited out. So even doing micro investors, and I do know a few micro investors that have invested in 1,000 companies by putting anything from $200 to $1,500 in companies. So there are ways to dabble in the market and learn, read the legalities and how they operate, what they're trying to choose to invest from, what is the platform, how are their cap tables looking. And you can learn all of this while just micro investing. Other platforms that stand out as well, Front Funder, there are a whole pile of them in the US where they find the deal flow, they net it out, and they allow non-accredited investors to jump in and make investments. And again, they do have criteria on how much you can put in. But again, this is only to protect you and your cash flow, and at the same time, enable more people to start looking at these deals and come in and help those companies grow and get to a position where they can go after larger dollars
because of that early money that came in from credit and non-credit investors. So you just have to, you know, if you really have an interest, you just have to jump into this space, start talking with people, introduce yourself to others through LinkedIn and other platforms, and find companies that you feel that you can strongly support and help. And it really is helping and helping them move the a few doors open. And that just comes from making introductions, helping them sell their product through. And I think the more help that everybody can throw into the space, you'll start to see more successes with these early stage companies.
And the beautiful thing is, I mean, Amazon, Google, Apple, Facebook, they all started out of dorm rooms, garages, when their shares were, or when their market cap was under, or when it was effectively zero. So you never know. If you do this sprinkling method, like you were alluding to, you never know which one would hit, especially if you're going across 100, 1,000 companies. Odds are, it's not guaranteed, but odds are you're going to have a couple really, really good winners in there. So yeah, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
It's a great way to start. And, you know, it may seem like it's too hard to manage. Again, there are platforms out there that can help you manage it, throw it on a spreadsheet. And really, again, it's if it's just something that you're learning, wanting to learn about, then why not just, again, sprinkle a few hundred or $1,000 into each of these companies that you believe that you can see going somewhere and really changing the way the world operates over the next 3 to 5 to 7 years. And if you see that being a company that can last forever and be a great tech that everybody's going to need or want, then it makes sense to dabble into it. And even if you can't today invest 5, 10, 20, 100,000, then you've got the opportunity to look at doing that in 2, 3 years when you've had some other financial transactions that go through, or you've changed positions, whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, it always pays to start somewhere and have a passion for it and keep working it and learning. And the more you learn, the better you get at picking the winners, because the longer you're in, you're going to start to see where the trends go, and that really makes a big difference.
So you bring up an amazing question that I have for you. You know, it's really trial by fire, sprinkling across a lot of companies. Even if you invest in even 10 companies, there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of different startup companies out there. You're in a unique situation where you have a lot of them coming to you. You're screening all of them. But let's take, for somebody like me, or your non-institutional side investor, where you have people coming to you, how do you even begin to do your due diligence on companies that you may want to get involved in? Because I love getting involved helping companies, but even my first thought is, okay, do I have somewhat of a expertise in this? Because if it's a food startup or a supply chain management startup, I know really nothing. So how do you decide what companies you either personally or the fund, where does the due diligence start? Is it the founder? Is it market trends? Is it the company?
Well, it's a great question, and I'm going to look at it. I know the initial questions, we looked at it from someone that may have been a non-accredited investor and how they would get into a market and doing more of a sprinkle effect so that they can help de-risk their investments by spreading them around versus being a sniper shot and putting them exactly into the buckets that you feel are going to have the most success and putting more money into those buckets. So if we take that approach and go back to the accredited side or a venture capital side, our goal is to optimize our investments and get behind the companies that we think have the biggest potential to rise, grow, scale, and become, as the world would call them, unicorns, or just become a mere exit. And when I say mere exit, it means that it can exit at any point in time within the first 2 to 5 years. And what that looks like for, a 1 to 10x exit. So it really depends on how you are envisioning your investment thesis and what you're going after. In the case of going at it from a credit investor and going at it from a venture firm side, where you are investing other people's money and trying to grow and come back with some larger returns, the key is that you're focused on companies that have a 5 to 10 year outlook. So where are they going to be in your vision of the world in the next 5 to 10 years? Do you see them really building up, even with pivots? Do you see that this product, service, tech innovation can really change the world in that next 5 to 10 years? And if you do see that, then that's probably a good way to start, is that's a probably a good chance if that company you think can pass through all of these tests of what the world can throw at it, but the tech is still going to be needed in those years later and only grow, then there's a pretty good chance that that company has a really good opportunity for success. Then you're going to go and you're going to look at other, again, other KPIs within your deep dive into that company, and things you're going to look at from the founder. Is it their first time building a company? Is their second, third? Have they had other failures? Failures are always great because then they learn what to do and not to do. They also learn how to become a CEO and how to envision growth and how to think big, but also how to refine it down to a sniper shot to get you into the right market and to drive and grow that business. So there's going to be a lot of emphasis put on the founder and where they come from and what they've done. And then secondarily, it's going to be put on the team. Are the team that they have today, is that the right team for the next 3 years to get them to a scalable business? And then can they pivot the team and grow in the right people at that time to make them a scalable, larger enterprise that's going to be doing 10 to 100 million in revenue? So all of these things are all going to be brought in again on that founder, on that team. You're going to look at product fit. Does this product have the scalability with an A team and a B product? You know you're going to have a lot of success because an A team, they can make any product an A product. They just need some time, market opportunity, and ways to get out and tackle the product. And sometimes that comes through funding, that comes through mentorship, coaching. So there's a lot of things that can also tie back into those areas that we originally brought up. And then how flexible is the team on learning? Are they open-minded? Can they pivot on a dime? We could probably go on for days and days on all of the KPIs that you're going to tie into when you're analyzing a company. But it really starts with you envisioning where this product or where this company can go in the next 5 to 10 years. And if you full-heartedly believe that this company and what they're delivering can be a global changer in that time frame, then it's diving into the founder, it's diving into the team, the scalability opportunities, market trends. So there's a lot of things that'll get pulled into this, but it really does start with, can this business be around in 10 years?
So just wanted to paraphrase that really good answer. So first start with the company and the business model, then check out the CEO to see, are they coachable and mentorable? Don't know if that's a word. Can they pivot? And then the team, is the CEO surrounding themselves with a good team? Can they also pivot? Can they be coached? Because I really like that a team and a B product can make really anything happen.
100%, 150%. It really does. And, you know, these are the mental notes that you're taking as an investor. You know, someone today, I was on a call and they asked me, you know, what are your stock portfolios doing, or what have you chose to do with them? And, you know, I could say that I spend all my time trying to figure out the next market. Where's the world going to go? What's going to happen? And really what I did was I just looked at what companies do I really like right now and what companies are going to come out of this even stronger in the next 5 years and which companies are going to are at their bottom today. And if they go lower, I'm okay with that, but they're at their bottom, which means that there's nowhere but up for them. And are they going to be the big leader in the next 5 years? So that's how I chose to make my investments. So instead of it now having to worry about it, I do not need to look at anything anymore. They're now closed off because the market is going unstable and it's up and down. So to me, that is the perfect play for the next year to let them figure themselves out in the market. So when you're looking at the strategy of how can you invest in private equity, how can you invest in prop tech, whatever it might be, it's always looking at, do you feel that you're in the ground level? Do you think that there is upside? And if there is, what does that upside look like over the next 5 to 10 years? Is this going to be something that changes the world? And if you believe it does, then now you need to start doing the homework, diving into the founders, the business model, the size of the venture, the opportunity, how much money are they going to need to raise over the next 5, 10 years to make this successful? And you can go on and on and on. And can you get the right backers along the way that are going to support this company? Because everybody can see that this is going to be a juggernaut of a business in the next 5 to 10 years.
I love the way you put that, because yes, you need to take a lot of current KPIs into account, but also as a investor in this space, and this literally just came across my mind, you need to be really, really creative in your own thinking as well by trying to imagine a future by that, by definition, is not here yet. So trying to imagine and be creative in figuring out what could the world look like. I mean, none of us are going to ever be 100% correct, or else we'd all be billionaires living on our own yachts. So we need to be extra creative, and the ones that have that extra ounce of creativity and understanding, okay, this is where we came from, this is where we're at now. Again, you're not going to be a sniper and get it on the first or second try, but if you can have some idea of where we're going, that's really, really going to help. The creativity factor seems to be huge here.
I totally agree with that. Well shared. I think, again, the more you're in the market, the more you're in the space, the more you read, the more you learn, the more you talk, the more meetings you take, the more interest you get from people all over the globe, you're going to start to find, you know, your space and how you want to invest, you build your own thesis. And the key to a thesis is that everybody that does have a thesis, they are really refined on that thesis. They've tried to take out any sort of obstacle that can take them off course of that thesis. So in doing that, you need to also look at, well, if this is my refined thesis, and I'm going to moderate it a little bit as I go, but this is the thesis I'm going after. Now, what does this thesis look like in the next 5 years? Where's the world going to go to? Are we going to be really heavily into robotics because we're trying to remove these low repetitive roles? And if we are, and robotics are going to take those over, well, who's the company that's going to support that? Are we looking at money and transactions in North America and Europe that they're going to start to shift a lot? Well, how can I figure this out? Well, I go to retailers all over the world when I'm traveling, and I ask them inside of the shop when I'm buying something, how many transactions do you with cash versus with credit card? And you know, different countries have different answers. Oh, we're 90% cash. Interesting. Well, in North America, in Toronto or Montreal, they're saying that 30% is cash. But a year ago before the pandemic, it was 10%. So cash has gone up. Well, that's interesting. Why is that? So now you're getting a little bit of a shift. So you can start to analyze data, do your own research. And these are the things that are going to help you decide, well, is blockchain going to be the next big big piece because they've already hit their peak and now they're on the downside? Or are they going to come back up and now they're going to dominate because they need more understanding and recording of ledgers in products that are shipping cross borders? So maybe that's going to be something that's huge. So maybe we need to look at that as being a new incumbent in the space. Who's the one driving this? And then you go back again to how the world's going to see money. Are they going to decide that tokenizing everything is a better approach? So you kind of have to start to envision, and the more you play in the field and the more that you dive into these sectors. And again, this is why being a generalist is great, but being a real sniper in one of these areas, you're really going to be able to start to write the concepts and figure out where the industry is going to go. And can the industry shift to get to that space? And if it does, then is the outcome that there's no paper money anymore? And if there's no paper money anymore, then who runs and owns that? Is it MasterCard? Because now MasterCard can dominate if they open up their own blockchain / tokenize things. Well, maybe they could. So maybe I should have invested in MasterCard today. It's $167, or I think it was around that or something. So now where does that put us in 3 years from now? Are they going to, you know, triple down on their value proposition because of the direction that they're taking their business? So again, these are all different things that you have to think about, but you're right. You're never going to be perfect, but you can certainly start to envision where the world's going and where they're trying to drive it based on how monetary values work. And it's up to you to kind of you know, throw your dart at the right number and go after it.
Yeah, it's just a case of don't put your head in the sand and don't think the world will ever change, because that's wildly fixed mindset there. I mean, it doesn't need to be too daunting of a task. Just keep your eyes open. What are some things that you're noticing that haven't been there before? And now that you're talking about blockchain and tokenization, that's a real passion of mine, as I know a lot of our listeners. I've done a few episodes on blockchain and cryptos, but not to totally run the train onto that track, but yeah, just notice what's going on around you, what is changing, and if it's still around, you know, that's not just a little fad for 3 to 6 months, a year, but still around, it's really worth taking a bit of a dig into. You know, we don't need to be the next Warren Buffett are absolute professionals in these things, but just take some time to notice the world around you. And if there are things that are popping up and then more frequently, you know, really consider diving into that space.
Completely agree with that. I think the easiest way to look at it is that 10 years ago, tech was making a big leaps and bound change in the way that we communicate, the way we operate, from mobile phones to faster, quicker laptops, etc. And none of those things have slowed down or regressed back. A lot of biotech, health tech, all of these things, no matter with a recession, financial recession, COVID, all of these things have not slowed down the tech innovation. It hasn't displaced it or moved it into a space where people are going back to typewriters. There is nothing that has regressed back. It has only progressed forward. So no matter how we look at it, a tech may have hit its peak. It may have pulled back in the sense that it's not wildly being used because it went through a process of being overly abused for the wrong reasons, which just means that regulations and everything else are going to help, and governance are going to help correct that, which then means it becomes a staple product to build and grow forward from there. So there is a lot of change that will happen, and it will go up and down, but no, we're not going to go back to the typewriter. We're not going to go back to key entries. Everything is going to keep modifying and changing, some faster than others, but they're always going to progress forward, and it's picking the tech that you think can dominate in that space today, but also in 10 years.
So your passion or your specialization is in the tech sectors, DeFi, FinTech, PropTech, AgTech, HealthTech, you name it. Is there anywhere that you see that's outside of a high tech? And you don't need to name specific products, but do you think there is room in the low tech space as well, where we are making physical goods that can really make a run from a perspective of an investment point of view?
I do think you're going to see a lot more products that are going to get tried and tested at, call it, the low tech stage for sure. There are products that are always trying to do everything, an all-in-one type product. So you're always going to have corrections there. Unless you can build a community and build up a lot of need and want to fix the problem and make sure that it's a real fixable problem, you're probably going to see more companies come in and out of this space and not really make much of a dent. And that's not for trying. It's just sometimes getting people to change from something simple and small, just to get off an Excel document, to then spend more time trying to understand a platform. You may see that that's just impossible to do. So they haven't found the right way to simplify or break out and bring enough value back to that small component of change. So you do end up going into larger pieces of change, which then gets people interested. So you do have to kind of really hone in on what that is, and is it simplifying it or making my day longer and harder? And I think once you can really organize as a startup, what things can I change that are going to bring a lot of value to the company that's using the product or to the person using it? And if I can find what that nugget is and make that quick change and still make it transactable so that I can make money off of this, but save your customers time, effort, and money, I think that's where you'll always see a value proposition that people can't turn away from. But once you just throw something in there that you think is a special change, but people are having a tough time really finding a way to make it work, eventually those companies do fade out, unfortunately, faster than, should. But again, you're at a loss because you're not solving a large enough problem, and maybe it solved your problem, but it didn't focus on the larger vertical that you were going after and didn't solve enough of that problem. So you're going to get stuck. So you do kind of have to take that into consideration when you're diving into building a company or solving smaller problems. But 100%, there are a lot of small problems that can be a lot bigger amplified and turned into a real great company. It's just sometimes it takes a lot more time and effort to figure out how you can really make a dent in that space.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I appreciate your take there, because it's so, at least to me and obviously to you, it's very obvious that we are in a giant pivot to high tech and higher tech and deep tech. And yeah, just the days of hammer bashing aren't over, but they are quickly dissipating because we're just going to have a bunch of tech to help with that. So no, it's a great take. That's good insight, because I have seen my fair share of startups that are solving more niche problems or, you know, really, really small problems. They're very innovative and very interesting products, but what problem does it really solve? And I guess this kind of beautifully wraps around to your comment a few minutes ago about what is the business model and is it solving a problem that can change the world versus X? There are plenty of small problems that need to be fixed, but are they world-changing solutions that will fix the way how everybody lives? Maybe not. So yeah, really focus on the companies that have a global world change view versus, you know, let's solve this problem maybe in this demographic or in this geography.
Agreed. And the other way of looking at it from the entrepreneurial side is that if you are only solving a little problem and you're able to make a dent, but maybe there's a roll-up opportunity there. So now you take this founder who's really driven, creative, sorts out this market, finds a solution, is able to generate maybe a million or two, but are having a tough time trying to figure out what that next step is. Well, there is a really great opportunity to do a roll-up, find other like-minded products in the space and buy them and merge them in. Now you've got 5 million. And then you do another one, now you got 10 million. And now you're getting exposure to their networks and to their areas, and that can help you double, triple down on those revenues as well. So you may be solving a small problem and thinking that it was bigger, and you may not find somewhere, but it's profitable. So there's other options that you can go into doing, as I mentioned, a roll-up. There's other options that can really help you turn something smaller into something bigger. Again, investors, looking at it from an investor standpoint, we're always trying to look for the biggest picture. But when you can't see the biggest picture, a lot of the time you might look at the founder and think, this person really understands what they're doing. They'll find the bigger picture. I'm going to invest in them. Yeah, the product's amazing and it solves a small problem. Unfortunately, they see that, but maybe this is just their way into the market and they're going to do a roll up or they're going to do a bunch of other things. And then who knows, in 5 years, they might be doing 100 million with 20 products. And that wasn't even imaginable at the time that we started this. So sometimes you've got to take a run on the founder and really get into their mind, because you might be blown away on what they're really trying to achieve.
I'm really happy that you went from entrepreneur to investor, because I don't want you to give away too much of the secret sauce for the next episode when we chat about angel investing from the entrepreneur side. So thanks for not giving away too much there.
You bet.
Anyways, with that being said, final question I have for you is, we've talked about quite a bit in such a short amount of time. What would be, and this might be a very difficult question to answer because there is so much to know, but you're looking at a beginner, junior angel investor. What would be your biggest single piece of advice you would give to somebody who's considering getting into the space?
Well, I'll say that it's another thinker. You're making me think quite a bit here, because there are a million angles I can take on this. But I think the best way for anybody that is getting into early stage investing is, one, is to get into early stage investing, which means you're going to risk, but you don't have to make it as risk as you think you do. If you can get in there and read, learn, talk with people, learn the space, figure out that you want to be in there, but make sure you get into the space. Because once you're in there, you're going to start to learn new things. Read the legal documents, read everything, dive into every deep dive. Offer your time to be part of the deep dives. Figure it out. You have to learn what a deep dive is. What does it mean to go in and lead an investment round? What does it mean to go in and deep dive into a company? What does it mean to build an LOI? What does it mean to really understand where this product fits in the market? So you really have to take the time to put into what you're going to get out of it. So once you start to learn all those nuances and you can streamline that, then the next company you look at, you're going to dive into them and it won't take you as long as it did the first time. And you're always going to be creating a process around, what are you looking for? What are other people looking for? And you can learn that through podcasts. You can learn that through joining angel groups or joining syndicates, SPVs. There's so many platforms out there that will allow you to get educated, to learn about the space, and you can go at any pace you would like. But if you're really passionate about helping early stage founders, the best thing is to go in knowing a lot about the space before you dive into it, so that those founders, when they need that help and they're at their last lick of business, you're able to step in and help too. So there is ways that you can always help along the process, but being knowledgeable enough in the area is going to help you, but it's also going to help everybody around you. And, you know, there's always coming in as a rookie, and that's a good thing, but just learn as much as you can and don't shy away and be afraid of it. It's just change. It's just something that's different that you haven't challenged yourself on. And the more you jump into it and learn about it, the better off you're going to be, and be dependable. The last thing I would say is be dependable when you do jump in. Help learn, educate, and help others around you. And everybody, you know, what is it? More hands make less work. So the more people that jump in that are new, that are going to learn, they're going to start to get more interest and excitement for it and help others and vice versa. And really being able to be dependable in this space is helpful and producing the value that's needed to make that investment. So stepping in and helping out is going to be great too.
So learn, be dependable, and have some courage when getting into this space, because it can come with risks, but you won't ever see or you won't ever understand the risks unless you're actually in the fire, as it was.
Exactly. And just know that all the time and effort you put in is going to benefit you from knowledge you gain. And every dollar you put in has the tendency and option of coming out as net zero. You may lose it all. So at the end of the day, just know that what you go in with, you may not come out with. But one thing you will come out with is knowledge, and you'll meet a lot of great people in the journey doing it.
Oh yeah, I can second that. I've met some absolutely incredible minds in this space, yours included. And yeah, once you get in, it kind of sucks you in. It's a great, great space to be in. And JP, with that, thank you so much for this part one of two. This was loaded with a ton of great information that anybody listening, I'm really hoping some notes were taken or just listen again. And yeah, looking forward to seeing you on the next episode.
I'm also looking forward to it. I love it. And the last thing I'll throw is that it's very addictive. So make sure you're in and you're all the way in, because it's going to be a hell of a ride. It's an amazing space. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, you bet, JP. Thanks.